I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod, a wonderful redemption story for us this week, once titled The Crusaders Rugby Pod for our biased in One Direction. Having done a Hurricanes Rugby Pod, we've now been redeemed and accepted back in the Wellington region. So we'll tell you a bit more about that story. It really is inspirational. On top of that, the Hurricanes, incredible. The Crusaders, blew it. Super Rugby Aupiki Final, the Blues have got another title. Jip is a pretty happy man, I'll tell you that right now. And we've also got a good look into the under-20 system. Of course, New Zealand have missed the last two semi-finals of the World Under-20 Championship. We've got Jared Hoyata, assistant coach for the New Zealand team, talking about how this team is approaching it and seeing how maybe they can get their redemption as well. So let's carry on into the show. Of course, James Parsons to my left celebrating another title in the Auckland region.
Just so good to be at Eden Park and see that champions banner back up there. Carlos Spencer yet again involved in a title-winning Blues side, so his dominance in the club continues. But no, look, awesome night. I thought it was a fantastic game too. Played really, really well, so no, wrapped.
On the other side of things, Bryn Hall, we won't talk Crusaders this week. We will not talk Crusaders at all. I don't know what's happened there, mate, but that was a different team.
It was a great game. It was a great spectacle. Obviously, a lot of attacking rugby, and you know, for a lot of those times of that game, I thought the Crusaders would pull away. You know, it was I don't know how many lead changes there were in that game, but it just seemed like the Waratahs would keep coming back. And you know, we'll probably go a little bit more into what the 80th minute looked like and go a little bit more detail. But yeah, let's just get around the Hurricanes. I backed them to be the dark horse, and let's just get around the Hurricanes. Let's get around the Safar Moore. Let's talk around his carriage and how great he was on the weekend. So,
okay, well, let's do that then. Let's talk about the Hurricanes, and let's start with our man Kerry Getson, who emailed us last time, Jipper, and basically said to us, well, look, you're the Crusaders Rugby Pod. There's an obvious bias. Last week, he came back to us and said, Carl, thank you for... I'm used to it. Thank you for an interesting and balanced program last evening. I consider it the best so far, and I'm glad it wasn't all about the Hurricanes. You can have your name back. We are now, once again, the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Very happy to have the name back. A redemption story unlike any other. With that being said, let's talk about the Hurricanes. 36-23, the last 20 minutes of that game against the Chiefs. Quite incredible. If you weren't convinced already that they're the favourite for this title, what about that convinced you?
Oh, just, I suppose the momentum had swung to the Chiefs, and obviously Imoni's try, the way they bounced back from that and dealt with the pressure by being extremely clinical and efficient, just probably the only one thing they'd probably be disappointed by is that, you know, 17 clean breaks, 11 entries into the 22, and probably didn't get as many points as they probably would have wanted off the back of that attack. But man, they are going to be, you'd have to think, top spot and hard to beat at home. Seriously hard to. I don't know how you pick those Lucys, because Karifi comes on, he was a game changer. Is he too good at the impact role? As you know, sometimes players fall into that ability to impact a game, but again, you know, Shields, Yose, Lakai, it's just Flanders. It's it's an impressive beast to watch at the moment.
Bryn, this might be a question that a lot of people are going to hate, but you know, Ardie Savea has left. He was their number eight, and it seems like the balance of that loose forward trio might be better without him. Even though he is the world's best player currently, the balance of the people within that trio seems slightly better balanced to me.
Oh, I think they'll take Adi Sevier, and I think anybody in New Zealand would want him playing number eight. I just think, you know, with opportunities, you know, guys are given great opportunities. Like, you know, obviously Brandon Yorsey has had an outstanding game, and obviously starts the season. You've got Larko, Duplessis, Kariffa, you've even got Flanders, who's off the bench, obviously, as well. You've got Brad Shields, who's leading the team. So the depth that they have, and I talked about this at the start of the year, especially with the attrition rate of what's required of your loose forwards and the depth that they do have, you could bring a guy like Duplessis, Kariffa, that can come on straight away, have a good contact in the defensive play, make a turnover, and then be able to influence a game. Even setting up that trial with Naholo as well, you know, in that second half. So it just seems when they do coming on, they're having a massive impact on the game. But, you know, I think at the same time, the biggest important thing that I think has been massive for them has been their scrum. Their tight five in big moments and big games. Early on in that game, they had a few penalties in the first 15 minutes. They were able to accumulate that pressure. And then in the back end of games, they're able to have that that scrum pressure and being able to win games that way. So that's the most important thing that I'm seeing, is that in wet conditions, if it's a bit wet in the final series, they can go to their set piece. And when you've got a so far more running on the edge, running in the middle of the field as well, it seems like the game plan that they are having for their forwards and their back, it's integrating really, really well. And you've seen a great blend of rugby through the physicality, the attacking ability, but also the set piece and winning that as well.
I don't know if it made the final edit, but I did wax lyrically about Almoa a few weeks back. And I just think he is so primed for the role he can potentially play at this level. A lot of years of experience in and around that All Black squad. He's been given a leadership role at the Hurricanes, and he just seems to be going from strength to strength. He is coming to quite the complete package in terms of, you know, his core roles. But now it's vintage. Well, I probably can't say vintage, but we all remember that run against George Bridge for Wellington against Kent's Canterbury. And he just looks that destructive again on that left edge. So it's really exciting for him as an individual, but for us as All Black fans as well. Because that battle, Takioho, Cody Taylor, like, I don't think it's a given now, off the back of his form, who's wearing those jerseys.
You think he could start?
Yeah, I definitely do. Especially, you know, Cody obviously coming back late. You know, he's very destructive when fresh, against fresh defenders as well. And he seems to just get better and better as the game, as defenders tire. So he's got a role that he could start, but it also provide impact off the bench at that next level. But man, he's in some form.
Can you talk about his core roles? Because, you know, we obviously all see the running and the power and the athleticism. What about the scrum? What about the line out? What about his work in and around breakdowns? Or, you know, he often is out wide, isn't he? But, you know, what about his core roles is making him good right now?
Yeah, well, look, I think it's a whole pack. Like, the beauty is when it doesn't go to plan, it's normally the hooker's fault. But when it goes to plan, you know, you can think he's changed. But I think the whole pack is providing a platform for that tight five to flourish. The Lucy's are really engaged scrum time, so that transfer of weight's there the whole time. He's got an All Black tight head who's just come into his own next to him. I think Numea, Brin sort of mentioned it, but he has to be on the radar. You know, like he talk about someone similar to Almoa, he's now nailing his core roles and has that explosive power. And I think Asafa's always had the ability to throw, but in this current system, he looks really comfortable and confident in the calls, which allows him to throw freely, which is a lot harder said than done.
We're talking 7 years since he went as an apprentice with the All Blacks. Do you feel like that is actually probably a good amount of time for a front rower to get those skills and understand their role and still provide a decent length of international career?
Yeah, I think so. You saw it with Dane Coles, you know. He was sort of blooded early, but then wasn't sort of given that starting role. You've seen it with Cody. And I think we'll, you know, it's a good message for George Bell as well. Like, he's the next big star in the hooking jersey, but it's just being patient and biding your time and getting some good runs at All Blacks 15. And then when he gets provided that opportunity, he can really take it. And I feel like Asafa's in that position now. Like, if he's given a starting jersey, he can probably deliver on that international stage and make it a real tussle.
You've been within their camp as a leader. How do you see him? Is he a strong leader?
Yeah, I think he's... Yeah, even when you see him interviewed after, he's very articulate. He speaks really well. He does his work. He's had one of the best hookers to sit behind and learn from, and Colsey does the work. Like, his performance, his performances over a long period are no mistake. He's done the work all week that allows him to perform that way, and it just looks like with his shadow sort of move, Asafa wants to be that I suppose beacon of light for the next Hurricanes hookers coming through, and he's doing it.
Brent, we'll come to you in a moment. I really want to talk about the next email that's come through from Chris Minto, who's one of our regular emails. I think he needs to be talked through a couple of things. It's a bit of a counselling session here. He says, one, he starts off saying, I'm upset, I'm a Canes fan, and I think that's just BS that other Canes fans are accusing you of being biased. So thank you for that. Appreciate your support. But he says, now, being a Canes fan, I want to position something with you. Yes, this is a good Canes team, but I don't think they're ready to win the title. I think it's 1 or 2 years away. My reasoning is I equate them to the Canes team that went down in the final in the fog. A competent tight five, best loose forward combo, class nines, electric fullback and winger, pure international class midfielders. You've got a 10 and it's all on Brett Cameron's shoulders. There isn't another 10 with the experience or the experience of fullback as a pivot to win a final. Bryn, do you agree? Do you think that they're there?
Geez, that's pretty tough. I think all the ingredients that you've talked about, I think it's great to have all those things. And I think the biggest thing for the Hurricanes has been able to, what Jip said, has been able to win the games, the derby games, the close games. And, you know, obviously the finals are at a later stage, but, you know, the building the confidence to be able to win games like that against the Chiefs, you know, against the Blues or whoever it may be, Crusaders, whatever it may be, in different scenarios, for different situations, weather conditions, and they're picking up that confidence. They haven't lost a game this year. And I think, you know, Brett Cameron, let's not forget, you know, he's an All Black. Brett Cameron was selected as an All Black. He's had experience with Canterbury. He's been down in the Crusaders. He's learned under Richie. So, you know, he's been in and around, you know, the New Zealand environment for 6 or 7 years. So, and with what that forward pack is doing, you know, you're only as good as your forward pack going forward. And with all the forwards at the tight five, the loose forwards, and being able to go forward, Brett Cameron just has to be a game manager in that sense. Yes, he can attack and at his own apparel when he does do that, but he's more a facilitator, being able to get them in the right areas of the field and being able to game manage and put the guys away in the outsides, your midfielders, your outside backs, and being able to, I guess, game manage. And he's doing that really, really well. He's kicking his goals. And I guess, for me, the winning of the competition for the Canes will be their forward pack. Can they continue the high standard that they have had right now? I think they can, because the war of attrition when it comes to their loose forwards, they've got the depth there, and their tight five has continued to keep standing up, especially in scrum time. And that wins finals in the back end of the year if you continue to keep going in your set piece. And they've been able to do that for the first 7 games of the year. So I think they're in a good spot. I'm not worried about the fog, I guess, example. I think they're in a good place to, you know, be favourites or be there or thereabouts the final come to the back end of the year.
They are going to be a very tough side to beat. And I suppose he's got demons with Elliot Dixon and Try. So I could see, like, it's probably a little bit like our poor Blues fans, you know, like they don't want to get overexcited, you know, because previously, and I speak from experience, we may not have filled them with confidence. But I just think if you look at it statistically and the pressure coming on around that 60-minute or 59-minute, and the way they responded, and the way the coaches responded by getting fresh bodies out there with Flanders and Karifi, turned the game on its head. It was right in the balance there. And they're leading, you know, defensive accuracy with a rush D, the top three in lineouts, the dominant in scrums, so efficient at the breakdown with the amount of loosies they have. Like, those are all the ingredients to the perfect cake. The icing will be just dealing with that finals pressure.
His other concern is that they're 1 to 2 years too young to deal with that finals pressure, Brent. What do you think about that?
You know, you look at the last 2 years, it was, you know, the Chiefs and the Blues, they were in the finals positions, and you could arguably say the same thing. You know, they hadn't experienced finals or been in finals, but I guess the final experience is going to be a little bit different. I know they've lost the last two to the Brumbies, and I guess the challenge for them, the icing on the cake, what Jip's saying, is that when they get to that final, can they handle that pressure? And so everything that's telling you right now through the first 7 games, they've got the ingredients to do that. The challenge will be for them when it comes to the end of the year. But I think the players that they have had, I think we're seeing the reaping of the rewards of what they are now is because they've been there for a long time. You know, their loose forward trio, their tight five, have been together for 4 to 5 years. And now guys like Safa Moore, who had his apprenticeship under Dane Coles, is now given that at that time, like with Brendan Yorse as well, playing with Adi Sevier going. So there's definitely enough experience there. They're not a very, very young team. Like you look at the Highlanders or currently the Crusaders with their tight five are very young. I think they're quite experienced and well-established with their 4, 5, 6 years of playing Super Rugby, sprinkled with a few experienced All Blacks that are playing at a really good level as well.
Chris, hopefully your glass is now half full. You know, despite Alex Dixon dropping the ball in 2015 and that title being robbed and you didn't get two in a row. I'll tell you what, we'll send you out the player sport ball. Thank you for being our person this week. Your glass should be half full. Things are happening here. Good things. A ball.
You haven't lost a game.
You know, you haven't lost a game. Chris, it's going to be all right. Thank you very much for another email from you. We really appreciate it. And if you want to send us an email, send us an email to aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. Leave a comment in the YouTube section and we'll get to you and we'll give away one of these balls each week. Well, why don't we unpack the Crusaders and exactly what happened over against the Waratahs, a 43-40 loss in extra time. They had their opportunities. Bryn, we touched on it earlier. I'm not sure 100% where to start with this, but key moments probably where the basics, like a kickoff reception or a line out, just didn't go to plan. And to use a James Parsons term, it's so un-Crusader-like. You know, it was hard to understand what was going on considering what happened the week before.
Yeah, look, I just think the ruthlessness and how clinical they were against the Chiefs, they weren't there at times, especially on attack. You know, they were able to score points. They scored, 40-odd points. And I thought, you know, they started really well within around their phase play attack, made some more improvements in that area. But I think just, you know, the understanding and I guess of what's required in those situations. Look, you know, when you score points, you know, your exit's really, really important. And in the first two tries, you know, they weren't able to exit well. And to the Waratahs' credit, given the opportunities, they were able to score off that. So, I think the game went back and forth. I thought, you know, to be honest, I thought the Crusaders would go over the top and, you know, they scored points. I think what was the score? It was, you know, when Mitchell Drummond scores that try to make it 33-30, I thought, you know, that would be time for them to go over the top with the likes of Moody, Owen Franks and the bench coming on. But, you know, the Waratahs, they stayed in it. And I guess the ability of the Crusaders not to be able to be clinical and execute it in crucial moments, which we weren't able to do. And probably, you know, if Rivers Rahane had his time again, you know, I'm not too sure. Well, actually just watching that goal kick around what was going on with the time. But I think, you know, I'm presuming there was conversations with the ref around what the shot clock would have looked like. But even from that situation, you know, you expect the Crusaders to hold on that ball, win that kickoff, kick the ball out and not go to extra time. So yeah, it was disappointing, but at the same time, the Waratahs, they did what they had to do. They won, and that's two wins against the Crusaders in one season.
Even if they had charged, like even if he let the shot clock run out and they charge and he doesn't get the kick, they're still ahead, game over. I think on a positive, I think they're very efficient in attack. Like, they had 9 entries for 5 tries. You know, they're scoring points. It's just, I suppose, the discipline of their set piece. It's just like, that's been them. Mm-hmm. And to me, that must have just been a missed call. I was obviously expecting them to go straight up and not slip through the line-out that obviously went short. I think it just shows how brutal Super Rugby is and how, I suppose, the preparation is so important to be consistent, to get consistent performances. And they obviously peaked for that Chiefs game because a derby lifts the intensity and you dot your I's and cross your T's. But what the Crusaders have done for so well for so long is that's them every week. You know, that's their bread and butter. And it does make you appreciate how good that side and how well led they were, that 6 title team I'm talking about that Bryn was part of, to keep 6 years in a row, to keep that sort of Chiefs preparation that we saw and get that performance and be brutal and relentless around that is pretty, it just shows how remarkable that squad was.
If there is a shining light, Sevu Reese is that shining light.
He is
looking amazing. Fantastic on the right wing, in everything, doing everything, powerful, great off the mark. Bryn, What do you see Leon McDonald and Scott Robertson doing with their wingers? And is Sever Reece part of that starting back three?
Oh, I definitely think he's in discussion. I think, you know, probably the Crusaders' best, I think, for this year. Time and time again, his ability with ball in hand, he scored tries. But you look at the amount of defensive efforts that he puts in, chasing back. You know, there's been countless times this year that he's been the last defender scrambling back and then been able to get a jackal on that ball, which is very, very tough to do. But, you know, time and time again, is putting himself in really good positions. And, you know, his work rate is the best thing that Jip and I have talked about, his ability to be able to win, whether it was with Lisa Whanganuku last year, in and around the ruck, and being able to get some go-forward ball for the Crusaders team. So he's been great, but I definitely think he's in the conversation. With Will Jordan being injured and probably not being in that winger role, he was probably going to be moved back to fullback. Sean Stevenson's in and around that. Not too sure with what will happen with his injury, but I think with Sevi Reece being there, with Caleb Clark, Mark Talia, obviously those guys are in the reckoning with the Blues playing well. And I think, you know, a guy like Josh Morby, look, he's been an unsung hero, I think, for the Hurricanes. On the weekend, look, his touches that he had, he's got a triple threat play. You know, he's one guy that I think is knocking on the door as well with his consistency he's playing. But I think, look, Sevi will be there or thereabouts. Starting on the wing, look, he's done it before. He's got the currency and international level to do that. It's whether he could just continue this form. And knowing Razor and Leon's having spending time with him, they'll definitely probably see him in that makeup, I think, when they announce that team later in the year.
Leon's played Stephen Perrottet at 15 for a long time. So if he's selected as the first five, there is the opportunity to carry extra wingers. Damien can play fullback as well. I think it would be the most challenging position currently to select. Like when you've got Mark Talia, I think Caleb Clark's in great form. He's playing good footy. Surprise, surprise, two Blues players. but yeah, I agree with Morby. He's sort of had two or three really strong years. There's options aplenty for them to choose from.
It's difficult when you've got Talia and Reece, who are probably the two form wingers. They play on the both
Satoru
sides.
Nanae as well.
Nanae Satoru, I mean, Nadawa is back as well. But when you think of those two and, you know, a tendency of New Zealanders, and we've had a question about this, I can't remember who was it from, the power winger on the left. Do you go, okay, we're going to have a power winger on the left and we're going to have one of these two blokes on the right and a fullback, or how do we make this up? Can you just go, no, actually, we want Mark Talia on the left and Sevi Reece on the right?
Yeah, you can. And I think it's hard to say that Sevi Reece and Mark aren't power wingers, because the amount of defenders they beat, they stake a claim to be that. So I think if you look at the current, you know, I think Amoni would be the same. Etony certainly is a power winger, so I'm not sure that will be as big a factor, because I feel like the majority of them could play both roles.
Mm. And Talia has last year at the World Cup.
Yeah, and the way Sivu's playing, he's doing that currently, like he is just beasting players. So, as I say, I just think they're fortunate, obviously, with Will out, and they've got first fives that can play 15, it may be made a little bit easier for them to be able to carry extra and see what they're like.
And we haven't touched on Raita Matavuku Deepkins yet either, because he's been outstanding for the Landers, although he popped a card here and there.
Old Lancaster showed some serious pace from the Rebels. Mm. Like, he burnt Jacob a couple of times, which surprised me. Like, he must be rapid.
Really?
Like, seriously rapid.
And clever. Like, the chip ahead in that position.
Mate, he's Joe Schmidt will have his name down, surely.
Oof, he looked like the full deal, didn't he? Mm. He had, for me, it reminded me of Jeff Wilson, 100%. The way he did those little extra things that you just don't see people doing, that crazy chip and chase with no one in front of you because actually it's going to buy you time, you know, things like that, Brent.
That try before half-time.
The Landers, you know, they went down 47-31 to the Rebels, who are now in fourth spot, Brent. Goodness me. But at the start of the year, you said, hey, this is a team to look out for. What's not quite going to plan here for the Landers?
Their defence, for me, is the question. I think, like, they were tackling mid-90s, 90% early in the season when they were, you know, sort of performing well. They were at 85% defence on the weekend, but it was more they allowed 53% gain line. So the Rebels, you know, and the Rebels have led the comp in sort of those stats because they're a big pack and physical, but it's just an area they've been so efficient in, the Highlanders defensively, and they haven't hit the 90% for a couple of weeks. And I think you have to give credit to the Rebels. I mean, they've got a very good squad. They just haven't really put it all together. But now I think they've got a bit of confidence and belief, which does a hell of a lot. They've got plenty to play for, trying to save the organisation. I think we have to sort of acknowledge their ability. It's not just about the Highlanders. But, yeah, I think the defence for me was, really surprising because it's just been... It's been their weapon. It's been their go-to. They've been able to win games because they haven't conceded so many points. But the Rebels just played on top of them. And as we said, Lancaster, the skills to do what he did was just phenomenal. And the Rebels are a genuine chance now, you have to say. Like, we all probably sort of have to eat humble pie on that one because I don't think anyone predicted it. But statistically on the weekend, they were streets ahead. And they had 10 entries for 7 tries. You know, like, all the key stats, set piece was strong. They are trending in the right direction.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, speaking of good options, the Blues. The Blues winging Opiki. A big comeback towards the end of the season, taking the final to Eden Park. They beat the Manawa 24-18 in a very good game. 18-5 down with 20 to go, Jip. They did you proud.
Oh, hey, you talk about the Hurricanes dealing with the pressure at 20 minutes to go. This was, it was phenomenal. Even when they missed the conversion, I think it was 18-10, I was like, oh, now you're going to have to score twice. They just put on a clinic. And I think the key stat for me around them is the 14 turnovers. I mean, they were averaging like 26, 27 early in the comp. And since they've got that, between 12 and 14, they've won games. They were an expansive team. They liked to offload, but they didn't quite earn the right initially. And they sort of parked that and realised their weapon was, let's just go direct. And in the last 20, they did that. They'd sort of gone away from it most of the game, and the Chiefs were, dominated, and their line-out was clinical, which was the one area the Blues managed to get on top of them in the last game in Hamilton. But I think Patricia's kick, for me, they were going nowhere. They were playing in between the two 40s. There's 3 minutes to go. For her to kick that kick, and I know it led to the error, but they understood the game and they backed their defence. They backed, if we put it down there, we can force an error and win this game. And Awa, who came off the bench as well, for mine, she just played herself into the Black Ferns. Like, I don't know how you can ignore that performance.
I want to just jump on the back of that with Awa, Kalia Awa. I thought her coming on and what she was able to do, her try, but what she does really well, I think, with all the nines that I watch, but predominantly her, she looks and sees where the space is. She obviously has got really good ability to get the ball out quick, but if you look for her first try, she was able to choose one way, go the other way, and wasn't going where the numbers were. So that's a really good ability for a halfback to have for her try that she scored. But then also, obviously, Leanna McKelly, two's try, she was going the same way, but then went back to the right-hand side where there was no numbers to then give McKelly to that try. So, I think she's definitely one to watch, and she was one that I had on my list for possible bolters for the Black Ferns squad with her performance on the weekend. But I guess what I've seen in Super Rugby Aupiki, Ross, I think, Alan Bunting touched on it at the start of the year. I think the unforced errors rates is probably one thing that I thought got better at the back end of the competition. I think there was a high handling errors, and I think that's one thing for the Black Ferns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
They'll probably won't want to replicate when they go into the international season. But I think the kicking game is, I think, an area that is continuing to keep getting better. I think Patricia Malepa was a perfect example around that. I think Cottrell and even Liv McGovern for the Chiefs, for Matutu, were able to do that in parts of the back end of the year. So I think the contact area is definitely one area I think that has gone to another level from Super Rugby RPK last year. The collision area and being able to build multi-phases and being able to go into that high count because you're seeing the efficiency of the breakdown a lot better. So, and then you think, you know, I love seeing Caitlin Vahakolo. I think she's one that I've really enjoyed watching. You look at Portia Woodman and Stacey Walker previously that have been on the wing, but I think, look, she's one girl with Ruby Tui. If they can get that good forward ball and give her opportunities one-on-one, we're going to see some great scoring for that outside backs at the back end of the year.
Jeez, I'd love to see her in the Olympics. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if it's possible because I'm sure the 15s want her, but God, that's some raw pace.
With some space in a game of sevens, she'd be unstoppable.
Just the amount of defenders beaten and her ability to just run at the same speed and step and not lose speed is just phenomenal.
Thou Thou and Boothia-esque.
Oh, very much so. That swerve, try she scored at Eden Park against Matutu was very Thou Thou and Boothia-esque. But yeah, I think the growth of the whole competition was massive. And just that was a quality game of football and worthy of a final. It was seriously good rugby. And they played in pretty challenging conditions. Rain was coming and going, and to have, you know, the Chiefs only had 16 errors, you know, it was a real low error ridden game, and yeah, I just think the most important growth was Patricia having the ability to do that kick. For me, was just like, that's just smart. That is smart, and not feeling the pressure of the clock.
Yep, that's time in the saddle.
Yep. Well coached, obviously, but still, just to realise the situation, and that's what won the game.
And we've got a Black Fern squad being named next week, so you both touched on, you know, Awa, the Blues halfback, reserve halfback, having a chance. Who do you see as the uncapped players who've got a chance of making this contracted list?
Probably the halfback spot is the one that's wide open. I think it'll be fairly consistent, personally. But there will be some players that may rejoin. You know, you have to think Liv McGovern might be in and around as well. But yeah, I think it'll be pretty consistent.
There's a great story from Liv McGovern going over to the UK, getting some time, playing professional rugby over there, working on her game when she missed out on the World Cup squad over here, come back, playing at 10, doing the business, Bryn. That's an option, taking a masterclass from her, really.
Yeah, 100%. And I think when, you know, she was moved into that first five role for Matutu, you saw a much more complete performance for, I think, that Matutu team. I think, you know, Grace Brock and Amy Duplessis along with her, I think more so her game management was massive. I think they struggled a little bit early in the competition, especially with the kicking. I think her exits and being able to, I guess, use that kicking game, which she probably learned over in up north, paid massive dividends. So, yeah, she's definitely one thing. Hannah King, you talked around earlier in the year, could be a possibility, but yeah.
She's class. Can't believe I forgot her. Thanks, Bryn.
He's here for you, mate. He's here for you.
Thanks for crediting me, too.
And when you look at those halfback options, Jipper mentioned before, Bryn, Awa, who else do you see being in there with her?
I think it's tough. You obviously got Hohaya, Baylor, and obviously the incumbents. Sorry, who's the incumbent, Jip? That's off the top of my head.
Tahinu?
Yeah, Marino Tahinu.
Yep. Yeah, so I think they're pretty consistent. I think they'll go with that. I think probably one person that might jump in there might be new. I think it might be Awa.
I think it could be Hohaya, Awa, Joseph.
Right, two bench players.
I don't know. I just think that, yeah, it's a new cycle. They've stood out to me. And I know it's a different role coming off the bench, but geez, they're exciting.
They are. And we'll talk a little bit more Black Ferns next week when those contracts are announced, and hopefully we'll have someone from the team come on to the show. Now, later in the year, we'll have the World Under-20s Championship, where New Zealand is planning to have a really solid crack at the title. And we thought we'd talk a little bit about this this episode. We're going to be joined soon by Jared Hoyata. Now, Jared has a pretty long rap sheet. Of course, Taranaki, the Chiefs, Highlanders, Cardiff, North Harbour, Montpellier, Taranaki again, All Blacks, Māori All Blacks. He's played a fair bit, 40 years old, and he's now transitioned into coaching, and he's part of the New Zealand Under-20s setup. So, Jared, thank you for coming on the show. Barely a line on that forehead, though, boys. Like, to think that he's 40 years old and played that much footy.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of Botox in there or something.
If you saw the colour of this here, mate, you'd see that I was looking a little more like Gandalf than I'd like.
So, Jared, what attracted you to go from playing into coaching, and particularly coaching with Taranaki in the academy and New Zealand Under-20s and that youth area?
I think I'm the oldest of six, so I think naturally I enjoyed teaching and coaching my younger brothers and sister. When I left school, I actually went to Teachers College down in Canterbury as well. So I enjoy, you know, that part of my life. And then when I finished playing, you know, I played to I think I was 36 or 37. So by that stage, you're doing a lot of player coach work as well. So it's just something that I found I was really attracted to and enjoyed.
Since you were a young buck coming through and being coached, has a lot had to change in the way the coaches approach it?
I think so. When I was a young buck, you just sat at the back of the room and you didn't say boo, and you hope you didn't get asked too many questions. But that's just kind of how it was back then. But now the kids coming out, they're very confident. They're happy to talk and discuss options, which I think is a good thing, especially when they've done their homework.
So you always sort of did tend to coach, as you said, but you also made a really strong rapport with the young players and squads.
Yeah, I think it goes back again, Chip, being the oldest of six, and there's quite a big age gap. So my youngest brother is actually 21, so I'm closer in age than my parents. My parents had me when they were 19, and there's a 20-year gap between me and my youngest brother. So, you know, being able to relate to my younger brother and my younger siblings has definitely helped. I've just always got on with the younger boys as well as, you know, the older crew.
Talk about Taranaki. What were the key sort of big rocks that made you guys successful in winning that title, and how do you plan to sort of transfer that to the under-20s?
Well, I can definitely talk to the pack. You know, our three key rocks, I guess you put it, is the set-piece dominance. So, you know, line out and scrum, obviously, but also the maul was a massive factor. And if you looked at the under-20s last year, that's something that they... you know, that's something that led them down. I think they got 11 more tries scored against them in 5 games, which you're not going to win too much games with that kind of record. Brutal collisions, mate, which is something that I loved as a player, something that I pride myself on around creating quick ball for the backs. And then the last thing, just work rate, working for each other. So, you know, we've got the young guns of New Zealand rugby playing for us, but we need them to be working. So... it's no good having rock star individuals if you're not working together as a team. So I think if you're looking at the Naki team, I'd hope you'd see that in how we played. Set piece, brutal collisions, and work rate.
And I suppose, as you sort of alluded to, the size of the opposition at under-20s last year was quite a big difference. Have you gone for bigger bodies, or do you think you can sort of do it technically as well?
It definitely helps being big, as you know, Jip, but... I think there's definitely a technical point that we can get across in our coaching, adding detail to that, and then just full buy-in of what we're trying to do. I think when I reviewed some of last year's stuff, it was very individual, whereas I want my pack working together, working as a team.
It's great to see that the Rugby Championship has been brought in for the under-20s. I think we kind of missed that balance, and I guess having that competition aspect when the Six Nations are consistently playing. Having that and play and then going to the World Championship, you talk around, obviously, technically around the forward pack and the contact area and then possibly being a little bit bigger. How do you do that in such a condensed time frame? Obviously, you want to get the big rocks and be able to do that. What's the planning around how you try and get those things together, get that over the line and be competitive against the big teams like the French and your pool play?
we've kind of let them have a week to digest, and now we're sending out a whole lot of information. And the camp, the week that we've got in Wellington is packed full of content. So it's going to be tough. I know what it's like, you know, as a player going into those environments. It's not easy. You boys will know as well. But I think it needs to happen. Great facilities in Wellington, so that will help. And then the Rugby Championship set up just like the World Cups. There's a game every 5 days, so replicating the World Cup, I think, will help put the boys in good stead for that tournament.
The expectation of the under-20s has always been so high. I mean, you guys have all kind of been in and around there, and championships have been won, and the last 3 years, the French have done it really strongly, and it hasn't been as good a couple of years for New Zealand. Is that something, because the players in this team aren't necessarily even connected to those results, is it something that you talk about, or is that just something for the back office staff to work on their systems for, and the players get a clean slate with no chat about the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, that will be led by Jono. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes about. Obviously, we don't go into camp till the end of the week, so that will be interesting. But from playing over in France and seeing the squads they have, like I played for Montpellier where the squad was 60-odd players. You know, out of that 60 would be, you know, 10 guys in the French under-20 group. Training is all year round as fully professional players. So we realise that we're up against it. There's some great initiatives in New Zealand around the NDC program, which gives some of those young guys a bit of a leg up to train like a professional rugby player. But, you know, the guys are in France, they're fully immersed all year round. So we are up against it, do realise that. I think the last time we won was, someone correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe 2017, which is, you know, it's a long time ago now. So we're up against it, but we're definitely going there to win.
It does seem hard. If they're fully professional, they're there all year round. That's a pretty tough thing to come up against when you're a little old New Zealand. And I mean that in the nicest possible way, isn't it?
I look at it differently because the life skills you learn, like being out, going to uni or getting a job or, I don't know, it makes you appreciate the opportunities that you get to play play footy. So, I think it's a catch-22. Mm. But I think from a development point of view, throwing them in that young can be troublesome out the other end. So you do need to get that balance right.
Nurturing them.
Yeah, and just, you know, like those sort of full-time environments are pretty intense and there's not a lot of opportunity, I suppose, to do anything else. And also you only get one opportunity. Like rugby is so ruthless in this country that you don't want to be thrown in there too soon. I suppose that's what I was sort of talking about with George Bell, is like you don't want to miss that opportunity, you know, so like biding your time and being patient and then also I suppose the excitement and joy of when you get there rather than it just sort of being handed out. Mm. But I mean, that's personal views. I'm a little bit old school in my thoughts, so I'm not coming from a data research point of view, but I just think from a general aspect, letting these players develop and get real world experience, I think will hold them in better stead to be better players for a longer time.
Out of curiosity around this, obviously you're a coach and you want to win and not too sure how long you want to be the New Zealand 20s, but let's say for a 5 year, hypothetically, you're with them, Ho, and what do you think around, because obviously with the French and the Six Nations teams being a part of the a professional environment the whole year, are there kind of initiatives around what it could be for New Zealand rugby and what they might be in 5 years or 3 years time to get that kind of, I guess, growth and development faster than like the Six Nations teams have?
Yeah, no, that question's out of my pay grade, Brenner. You'd have to go up the chain to find out what's going on in that space. I know the NDC program, which is what they've got, and each franchise has got 5 young players under 20. That was trying to give them a bit of a leg up. But on your point, Jip, I totally agree with you, mate. You know, working with the academy for Taranaki for, you know, the last 5 or so years, some of our most rounded kids that come through have been out, have been on a building site or done an apprenticeship somewhere, have worked their ass off and then come back and correct it a little bit later. Mm. I guess what I'm talking about in terms of the French stuff is that they're probably a bit more physically developed. So being able to, you know, not being on the work site for 10 hours and then have to try and train and, you know, gym work, train, get their food and get the right amount of nutrients and all that carry on. It's just a lot easier to to grow, especially when you're under 20. But I think for the long term, I think you're right, Chip. Those more rounded people that have actually gone out and seen the world a little bit, worked, and then made it much better off in the long term, in my opinion too.
Yeah, and I think if you create an environment like you're talking about, like about having each other's back, having a greater purpose of what you want to stand for, man, that, there's no dumbbells you can lift that can give you that. Like, I reckon that mental edge and having an environment that Jared's talking about developing, whew, I just don't think you can out-train that. I think when it matters and you're hurting and you've got to chase someone down, the person that's got a higher purpose and have each other's back will make that tackle versus someone that's just been pushing tin.
Lifting the mental dumbbells.
Yeah.
That sounds James Parsons.
Mate, I reckon 90% of it is that. Yeah. Honestly, 10% of it's the physical stuff. 90% of it is creating an environment, exactly what Jared's articulated. And, you know, just hearing that, you know they're in, you know, they're in a good chance to be back in the mixer.
So then do you create another step where it's like the 23-year-olds or whatever who've been away and done that and then can come in and have that same under 23 attitude where it's not like you're coming straight out of school, you are coming off the building site and you've got to create levels, do you?
I think it would be, look, I'm thinking out loud here. Jeez, I'm almost hijacking your interview here, ho. Sorry, mate. always had plenty to say. But I think, like, maybe there is room for an under-23s or something like that, because the hard thing is with this younger generation is, you know, it's almost like when we were coming through, you knew you had to do your time at NPC, you knew you had to do your time at Super, you know, like, you sort of expected it, whereas now they sort of see their mate get fast-tracked and then, you know, they give the game up or whatever and you know, club rugby isn't seen as... I suppose, as influential as it once was for us as players. Like, I reckon I developed the most as a person at club rugby. you have to learn pretty quick there. but, yeah, I just maybe there is. Maybe we've got to create that opportunity or a funnel for players to come back in to the professional environment. And I think type five, it's massive. Like, you just can't be in a rush when you're in those type five positions. If you rush, you're not going to survive.
Mm.
You won't perform, you won't get selected, you know?
Yeah, we were talking about Almua earlier, right?
Like, yeah, he's a perfect example of type five. Yeah. Sorry, ho.
No, that's fine, mate. We're singing off the same hymn sheet here, because in the NACI, we put a lot more emphasis on our wider training group. So that's the guys that are a bit older, because we realise that there are plenty of guys that are late developers that come back in. I never played for the New Zealand Colts or 19s, a bit more of a late developer. So I've got a soft spot for those guys as well. So, you know, there's a lot of guys that for the Taranaki side, to use an example, that come in later on. They don't make it straight from school. It does seem to be a bit of an arms race to see who can sign the biggest schoolboy hero instead of actually letting them develop and pick the guys that deserve it.
You sort of spoke about you want your pack to operate as a pack, and something you were big on as, you know, as a player was sacrificial acts, you know, like the unseen stuff. Is there anyone that maybe you didn't, you know, have on your radar that played their way into the squad?
Yeah, there was a young kid from Hurricanes, Mosisi Basin, actually, who is a year young, out of fielding. He was outstanding on both sides of the ball. He does actually, I know it's big reps, but reminds me of how Artie plays. He is a bit undersized, but his work on both sides of the ball, on attack and defence, is really, really caught my attention and the other coaches. So he's one young gun to look out for.
I mean, knowing you as a person, you'd back yourself to, I suppose, teach or coach the technical stuff, but character would be a big pillar of selection.
They do really well with that JIP too, in these assessment forms. So not only do you get the feedback from the coaches, but also all the managers of the Super Rugby team. So they've just spent a week together in Taupo. So, you know, be able to get their feedback from the managers and see how they were touring. Because I think it's 3 weeks away in Aussie and 5 weeks away in Cape Town. So it's a long time to be away. So you want guys of, you know, sound character that are going to do the job on the field, but also look after each other off the field.
What are the things that represent character for a young kid still learning about themselves and their lives?
Guys that can lead themselves, really, you know, like they're only 20 or under 20. So, you know, I'm not expecting them to be Richie McCaws, but guys that can sort their own shit out, really. Turn up, like you say, perform consistently, do their homework, learn their own roles is really key. And just be a good bugger around the park, you know, and around the hotel or around in the public.
Would curiosity be a little bit of that? Like, you know, that willingness to be coached, that coachable, wanting to get better?
That's a key. You know yourself, Chip has been a skip for a long time, trying to help out the young guys. The ones that are coachable, you just want to spend that little bit more time with and go that extra mile. But, the guys that know it all already at 20, you know, they're a long day.
Ain't that the truth?
I'm imagining, though, because a lot of these kids, you know, they've been told they're going to be an All Black from they're 10 years old. They've stood out in every team they've ever played in, you know, through secondary school and then at the Hurricanes or at Auckland or whatever it might be. How do you temper that? What's the best way to make sure that a kid is grounded when they've come through that? And here they are at the stepping stone of the World Under 20s where players make their names, often become an international test player the year after in some cases.
Yeah, that's right. And it is tough. And a lot of it comes from their parents as well at times. So it's being able to give them honest feedback, but in a caring way. And that's something that I've learned from Barnsley. I know in that documentary, giving him a bit of crap about that because he comes across quite gruff. But in reality, he's a very caring man that, will go the extra mile for his players. And that's why they work so hard for him. So I'll be trying to gain the respect of the players as quickly as possible, and then so that I can deliver those messages and them have the respect for me to take those on board.
Jared, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate your time and all the best with the squad.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, as ever, it's time for the tipping competition, tipping.super.rugby. Join the Aotearoa Rugby Pod League. If you haven't already and you're involved in that competition, jump on board. Do better than us because it's hard not to.
Oh, my God.
So we've got Owen Carroll up front beating us all. I only got one tip right. I don't know whether I made my tips wrong or what I did on the weekend. I looked at them and went, I'm not sure I didn't tip that.
I had a lot of members of the Moana Pacifica Reds crowd remind me that I'd chosen the Reds.
Yeah.
And had a fair crack at my tipping ability this season. So, and I agree. It's poor. I got two, though. I don't know how. I must have clicked the wrong thing or didn't save. I'm not too sure because I felt like I only picked the Hurricanes to win. But I'll take the 2 points and run.
Fair enough. Now, we've got the first up game is the Drua at home versus the Canes. This is
7 p.m. kickoff. Canes get this.
Canes getting this?
Yeah.
You're picking it?
7 p.m. kickoff.
Because this is the kind of thing that a championship team can stumble on, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the Crusaders didn't. They went on to win, I suppose. But
yeah.
I don't see any team sending a change 23. It'll be their top side going over there. And I think that 7 p.m. kickoff is a big game changer.
Not as hot,
well,
not as hard.
You, what time did you kick off when you played the Chiefs there, Brenner?
I played the Chiefs twice and they've both done it at night.
Yeah.
But it's still hot. It's still stinking hot, but not to the extent of when I think I've played it in the daytime for the Maldives against Fiji, and it's horrific.
Yeah.
In the day. That'll be huge, honestly. It'll still be muggy and really hot, but I think it won't be as tough. But I'll go the Canes to get over the Drua. But great challenge though. I'll be really looking forward to that, to see if the Canes get the job done in a pretty hostile environment in Fiji.
Fiji.
Yeah.
Man, we've got to do a show from Fiji. Gotta take the pot on the road.
Well, let's talk to the Fijian Tourism Board. Surely they need us there.
Surely.
Yeah, talk to your mate, Mick.
Yeah.
See if he can sort us out.
Mickey will sort us out. We'll stay at his place.
Okay. Reds v Landers.
Oh, that's a tough one. In Queensland. I'm going to stick with my Landers.
You're going to stick with the Landers?
Yep.
Yeah, I think the Reds are going to be angry and ready to get going.
Oh, I think both sides are going to be angry. I think Tate being out, like they're going to get some weak suspensions,
That was silly.
McWright as well.
Geez, that was silly for McDermott.
Like, yeah, very.
What?
But when we interviewed him, remember him, he had some spice about him when we asked him that tackle, you know? Like, honestly, I started chuckling to myself when I saw him do it because I was like, man, that's the guy that said he wanted to take on Swinton or something. Some huge Adonis.
Yeah.
I think the Landers.
Yeah, halfback with Spunk, the Landers. What are you picking, Bryn?
The Highlanders have stayed another week over there, right? They're on a trip, aren't they? They've stayed over.
Yeah. And they'll probably bring Patchell back in.
Yeah, I'll go the Landers. Yep.
Ooh,
the Landers.
I'm glad I convinced you into that, mate.
Okay, so two tips away from home so far. Two tips away from
it. Oh, well, I tell you what, pick the opposite because I'll get them wrong.
Bryn, Blues at home versus the Brumbies. I'm presuming this is a home call.
Ooh, that'd be a good game, though. We'll go the Blues.
Well, my theory will be put to the test. If they tackle at 77% and win, I'll revoke my statement of them last week. But, I think the Blues get that.
Blues get that. And the Force at home versus the Crusaders. Now, the Force used to be a bogey team for the Crusaders back in the day. Now we don't know which Crusaders are going to turn up. Mm. What do you pick? The Force are bottom of the table, looking pretty average. Crusaders not far above them.
Crusaders.
Crusaders?
Yep, I'll go Crusaders.
Why?
In an improved performance. I think, look, they'll be bitterly disappointed, I think, with how they went. And I think the attacking side has been really good. Especially in the last couple of weeks against the Chiefs and on the weekend against the Waratahs. I think it's just the intent and the effort areas around the defensive work and being able to just move a little bit faster in all facets kind of makes it better. I remember when we played the Waratahs a couple of years ago, we lost to the Waratahs and we ended up playing the Force the next week actually. And we talked around our intent and being able to just be a bit better in that space. So yeah, I expect them to be better in that space and to get a result.
Again, like their set piece was low. At almost every time their set piece is low, they haven't performed as well. So just focusing on their big rocks. I think they're on tour. I think they're already over there. That is a big game changer, like sort of living and breathing it, especially when you're under pressure. Sort of block out that outside noise and just really focus on the footy. So, I think they'll get it done and pretty comfortably.
Pretty comfortably. Well, they're 6 points off the top eight right now, the Crusaders, so they need to start winning now if they're going to have any chance of sneaking in. And if you're going to sneak in, you need to beat the bottom place team.
Force fans are stoked that I've just tipped the Crusaders.
Yeah. Well, we've got three Kiwi teams away from home in Australia, all being tipped. This Super Rugby season, all sorts of weird and wonderful things are happening, so who really knows what's going to go on. Thank you, James Parsons.
Cheers.
Thank you, Bryn Hall, over in Japan once again. And thank you all for watching us here on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod or listening to us on an audio pod. Thank you once again. Please send us an email, aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. Leave a comment in the YouTube comments section. You can watch us on all the Sky platforms, YouTube, and any Rugby Pass platform as well. So thank you very much for joining us. Mā te wā.